This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hey, y'all, it's Monica. I had a really great conversation recently with Freedom Convo, and it validates my policy of always giving new podcasts a chance. This guy's very smart. It was very interesting talking to him. He brought a lot of good stuff out of me, but his ideas were, just very intelligent and interesting. So I hope you enjoy this right now. Thank you so much.
So you mentioned that bridge collapse.
Yes.
I have not been doing the conspiracy thing. It's all over the internet. Tell me what happened, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. So it's the Francis Scott Key Bridge. It's in Baltimore, the port of Baltimore. Recently, 2-3 days ago, maybe it was Sunday night, it was hit by a big giant cargo ship and completely taken out. The whole thing collapsed. Yeah. So when I hear something like that, first I ask myself, like, aren't bridges meant to be tolerate a hit like that? The incompetence canard, which I call it, it's like the government convinces you that it's incompetent, so you don't actually see how competent they are. And like with this bridge, I've gotten reports from people saying that even though there are all these homages to this historic bridge and the newspaper and stuff, people have written to me and said it was a problem. The bridge was a problem. It swayed. It made people nervous. It was too narrow. It was scary. So the bridge was a problem. And then when I read that port exports LNG, liquefied natural gas, among other things, LNG tankers are gigantic and super dangerous. And I thought that doesn't look like, I mean, there's a chance that the corpo governmental continuum, as I say, needed that bridge. That bridge wasn't going to work for them. It was going to interfere with their commercial interests. So what do? Well, you can lobby and rally and try to get support for taking the bridge down, building a new bridge. You'd have to pay for it. The people who like it will want to make it a historic thing. Maybe it was a historic thing. And you have a fight on your hands. You show your cards. And you have to build the new bridge before you take the old bridge down, which will take years, because that happened to my town, the Tappan Zee Bridge in New York. If you blow that thing up right now, you've got none of that. Insurance pays for it, and you can start using it as a shipping lane before you build a new bridge. So there are a lot of reasons they could do it. And I would say there's a lot of, there's means, motive, and opportunity. And that's what I think about that. Now, I could be wrong, but I would say 9 out of 10 times, like you saw with the COVID thing, when we were talking about that, you'd be like, oh, they're definitely doing this for that. You know, it's 2 years, not 2 weeks. Like, and these things come true. And that's why we had a big community there during the COVID stuff. Because, I mean, if you look at it that way, your theory more often predicts an outcome than the official narrative.
One of the things I wanted to bring up, we don't need to linger on this, but you said a term, anarcho-capitalism, and I'd never heard of this before, but it makes sense to me because I come out of the Marxist university class of people. For 25 years, I was a freaking Marxist anarchist. That's what I called. Now I'm an anarchist.
I think they called them syndicalists in Spain.
Okay.
The red and black
yes,
A, that's
exactly.
The syndicalist symbol. The gold and black is the anarcho-capitalist.
That was my flag that I would have certainly flown, the red and black, yes. But I guess over the last 5-6 years, maybe I've really gotten out of that and went much more into the agorist, middle-of-the-road libertarian view of things. So, but yeah, anarcho-capitalism. Why don't you unpack that just ever so briefly?
Sure. Yeah, I'll be brief. So the idea, Murray Rothbard is the kind of hero of anarcho-capitalism. He might have actually coined that term. He's a very well-known libertarian economist, and I would say a sincere one. some of the libertarian stuff, I think, is just a trap to dismantle the nation state in favor of a world government, not in favor of individual sovereignty. But the idea is he said there's only really two laws. They're obvious. Don't touch me or my stuff. And that in a kind of state of nature, you naturally defend yourself, and you would make associations, voluntary associations. If you had self-defense, it would work. And if people stepped out of the line, they would be pushed back against and not prosper. That the benefit of cooperation is self-evident, and the natural consequences of bad behavior keep people in line. And my favorite example is when I was a waitress for so many years. In the US, there's basically you only get paid like $2 an hour if you're a waitress, but you get a ton of tips. You get 15% in your pocket of everything you sell. So even when I was 17 years old, I remember calculating it, and I would make $17 an hour after taxes when I was 17, which was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And now that's even above the minimum wage right now. And that was an after tax number. And never, ever I don't think I can remember anyone ever skipping out on the tip. So mm-hmm. people every once in a while would skip out on the check, like once, maybe once in my whole life that happened. And it was probably an accident, but they paid for your services for social reasons or out of a sense of justice. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, a great example of what anarcho-capitalism is. And then I do worry a little, so even the expression capitalism, now that I realize that so much of it is financial capitalism, it's corporatism, it's hijacking national, international bodies, everything like that, I just shy away from that term. And I prefer agorist, like you said, which is agora is the marketplace. And the idea is have a freedom of, you know, the freedom in the marketplace, even if you have to barter or whatever, to get away from that overarching corrupt system. I like that better because it betokens more of that mom and pop entrepreneurship, which would happen if the government did not favor corporations, in my opinion. So like in the 19th century in the US, there were rising real wages and more productivity growth captured by the individual. And there was more competition and all that before the regulatory state. I think the regulatory state is what creates oligopolies and that kind of thing. So capitalism is a weird term now because it's so corrupted by the financial industry. But yeah, so I would go with, I'm a philosophical agorist. I actually hate shopping, so I'm more of an agoraphobic agorist.
I like that.
But I respect the idea, and I try to pay people in cash when I can, and little barter, stuff like that.
Sure. So I would like to get your opinion on a few things here, and I would like to give my opinion and receive also information from you. Sure. So Donald Trump, I have a question.
Yes.
What is the deal? And what I mean by that is this guy is always in court. There's like this lawfare going on with him.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Just tell me something about him. Like, is he going to win this election? Is he going down? Is he a bad man? Is he a friggin' a deep state, a fake?
Well, I would call him a created person.
Go ahead. Tell me everything you think.
Yeah, I mean, created, actually, a lot of times when I say created person, I mean when they were young, like they were identified young, I would say primarily as brilliant liars. The people who are very effective created persons or I've heard the term lifetime actors.
Yeah.
He's an actor. I don't think he was a lifetime actor, but he was trained as an actor on the show The Apprentice by Jeff Zucker, who ran CNN when Trump took the White House without spending a penny on campaigning, which, I mean, even Obama needed to spend like $85 billion or something. I mean, I think that was the cap that he blew through. I don't even know, but it was just, it's preposterous. It's on its face. It's more obvious than like that bridge. Like you can just see it, and you cannot win the presidency without spending any money when the entire media is against you. But what the media did was, in my opinion, say oh no, liberals, the scariest thing that could ever happen to us is Donald Trump. And that is what got the Republicans to vote for him. And he would do that. He would pick fights with them and he would say mean things. And I would say over and over again, this guy never, ever even promises to restore the Bill of Rights. Never. So the guy, he went bankrupt four times. Like, you're hiring him as a CEO. That's how people talked about it. He was a terrible CEO. He went bankrupt every single time. And there were a lot of nefarious activities. But what was the most important thing is that all of his fortunes, from his father's fortune, which he gave, passed down to him, to his casino operations, all of that stuff was government protected or subsidized. So his father built projects with government money. He opened a casino, which is a regulated industry where the government suppresses competition against you. And he actually got that license that another person with the same problems would not have gotten. And his sister was a federal judge. I mean, strange things. My sister's a federal judge. You know what I mean? Like, and his uncle, John Trump, was an MIT professor who confiscated all of Tesla's papers before Tesla's actual heir and nephew could arrive at the scene of his death. So I think he worked at the Atomic Energy Agency, or I'm not sure what exactly John Trump did, but the backstory is undeniable. And then you have the fact that the U.S. had its greatest... no one has ever restricted freedom as much as during his term, because he had an emergency order on the federal level that everybody could lean on to totally overstep any laws. And just the policies, the vaccine, he stopped the economy, you know, this stopped the economy for 2 years, killed people, destroyed their livelihoods, destroyed small businesses. I mean, a Democrat never could have gotten away with that. Never.
It's interesting now, because I had Trump derangement syndrome in 2016.
Oh, wow. So yeah, I'm new to
smartening up, free thinking. Yeah. I mean, I always considered myself a bit of a free thinker, but really coming from this Marxist woke bullshit, absolutely I was not. So anyway, so I went from maybe a year or a year and a half of Trump derangement syndrome, and then slowly began to think, you know what, this guy's actually funny. So I started to laugh. Yeah. I was like, this is the greatest show on earth. This guy is absolutely hilarious. And then I slowly turned to, this guy seems like someone who was put in place to really mess with people's heads, divide people into camps.
Definitely.
Yeah. And Justin Trudeau is doing the exact same thing. What do you think of Justin Trudeau?
I never think about him.
Oh, you're lucky. Oh,
I never think about him. I think he's cute, right? That's all I know, is he's cute. And people say he's Castro's son, which I don't believe.
Okay, sure. Okay. That's fine.
And that's it. I mean, I just assume that he is in on it like everybody else. Oh, I mean, even no matter who I look at in the Western Hemisphere at this point, maybe I haven't looked at Obrador in Mexico lately. Some things make sense and some things don't. You've got the enemies list of Maduro and those guys. And then the Evo Morales, I think, from... what was it with the lithium ion batteries where Bolivia was ousted in a coup, and the Haiti thing? Like, I just think the Western Hemisphere is getting just completely locked down by the internationalists.
Yeah. Canada's being opened up for a lot of mining for all this bullshit.
So to your point about Marxism, it's this, my little joke about the Tavistock and the Rolling Stones. Like, if it's not, it has to be good for it to work as a psyop. So the Marxist stuff has a lot of the critiques of maybe not Marxism, but like modern communism, socialism, especially if you come from like the English or European history, where a lot of the land was gobbled up under feudalism, or like a system that I would not respect as an origin of property rights kind of system. Mm-hmm. So then you have this whole structure of society where the elites own everything, basically. And then the people, you know, they ushered in democracy. And what are you going to do? Go full communism? Or are you going to say, well, we'll just pay higher taxes and redistribute some of the fruits of this land to you? when communism is, we're taking it and giving it to everybody, which of course, like on an individual level, is completely unjust. But there is so much injustice in the way government is hijacked by elites that I can see how you would, you know, see the injustice, or in South America and stuff, indigenous people, like they have a different even value system, and they're bamboozled by this idea of, well, you don't have title to this land, so it's not your land. It's like, that isn't fair. So I think there's something to like the critique, but it's just exploited.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Are we going through a deindustrialization process under the guise of some modern technological utopia, you think?
I would think so. There's a book by Servando Gonzalez called Psychological Warfare in the New World Order, I think it was called. And wow, he is Cuban. And he said that Cuba, because it was the most industrialized of the Latin American countries, it was, I mean, it was our playground. I should have bought it. It was very expensive, but I saw an old map of the US and the inset, instead of being Puerto Rico and like Alaska and Hawaii and stuff, it was Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
It was depicted like they thought that it was going to become a state perhaps, but it was Cuba. It was that much of an extension of us, of the US. And he said that's why they picked Cuba for the deindustrialization project, because they wanted to see if you could really do it. And so, yes, I think that is part of it. And it may be just it could be as simple as that old plot by David Rockefeller and others. You can't have a world government or a world hegemon. You can't have one power, centralized power, if the East and the West are going at different rates. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, a transmission, an engine and the wheels, they have to go at the same rate, or you're just not going to be able to make it work. And I feel like that the green stuff is about regularization is, you know, make it so everything just plugs in and you can, and all the systems can be run in the same way, kind of centrally, but they have to be similar. And the idea was to boost the East and pull down the West. And they have some job on their hands, because the tech can really increase productivity. But that's why they have to have the controls in place.
Oh my God, what a mess we're in.
Jesus Christ. Can't give up hope. And Jesus Christ is the answer, actually. And I'm like not a Bible thumping holy roller, but
you're Catholic, right?
Yes. Yeah. But it's Pascal's wager. It's just, what are you gonna do? There, if there's no God, you think you're saving this world. And if there is God, you just have to, you know, have faith and pray and save your own soul. If you save your own soul, if you do what you're supposed to do, which is love.
Yep.
Right? Love one another as I have loved you. Like, if you do that, that might save the world.
I believe that. Yeah.
I don't think anything else is going to.
That's involved in my crafting of a new metaphysical paradigm, where going back to the old way of 2018, 2019 thinking is over because of the mess we are in now. And to disentangle from this absolute insanity we are living in, we do need a new, dislodging, and then moving forward in a whole new evolutionary paradigm of thinking, which is very much more faith-based, I think. There's a core of the whole process, like from the human heart and the human mind outward to the family, to the backyard, to the neighborhood, and out. So in then out, rather than the state down to the individual.
Yes, exactly. I totally agree with that. That's a great way of thinking of it. And I would say this, like, this is a hard thing for me to say or think, and I'm afraid it will be misinterpreted as giving up. But when you look at history, if you're looking at what we're told is 10,000 years of human civilization, beginning of whatever, maybe this is why this narrative is so popular right now, that we were this technologically advanced and then collapsed. You've heard that for sure.
It's I'm totally into this stuff, this ancient civilization stuff. Go ahead.
Okay, well, it may be a little bit of a trick, because when I look back, it may be true, may not be true, but I'm maybe like not even look back that far then. Let's just take the last 2,000 years, something like that. New technology changes things, and you really, once it's out, and it's out on purpose. So like China, I wondered, there's two reasons I speculate that China did not advance in the same way or as quickly as Europe. One was, in Europe, you had the separation of church and state, which was competition. And competition to me is like the source of all growth. And in that case, it was, I think that it helped the individual understand their place, because they were being vied for by king and pope. Mm-hmm. And then China, I believe, intentionally suppressed technology because they knew it would upend the hierarchy. So I don't know if it was gunpowder writing or whatever, just keep it under control. And the longer you can keep it under control, the longer you can maintain the status quo. So I feel like it's out. And if you look back at writing or the plow or any of it, it changed everything every time. There was an old show from the 70s. I got to rewatch it to see if it's relevant. It was called Connections. And it was about all those turning points in history. And I just do not think we're going back. I do not think we're going back. And,
no.
You know, the scariest thing is if they're messing with your DNA, that is super scary. And if vaxes are contagious and they do that, that's very scary. But people scared me about fluoride. And I was fluoridated as fuck when I was a kid. And I can think, you know, I can think.
Yeah, it's hard to know what psyops to believe and what conspiracies to.
Well, fluoride
take.
Could be bad, but I'm sure. Just saying, oh, sure. it's not insurmountable. Same thing with whatever this DNA. But I would say other than that, we must have faith in the human being as not an animal, not a machine.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
You have to believe that.
Yes. Yeah. You did a story on your show yesterday about artificial intelligence, and it was a interesting story that you did there. But one aspect of it was they talked about the rationalists.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Because you mentioned that, I pulled out my book.
These are
the rationalists. Yeah. And this is my little handbook on philosophers. This is cool. Genius. This is Will Durant.
I don't know if he's,
you know, he might have been a psyop, but he was criticized for bringing intellectualism, history, and stuff like that to the people. So he would do little seminars at night and like workers would go. But if you want to get philosophy in a nutshell, so he has Spinoza is in here, which I think he says is the greatest philosopher ever, I think is his opinion. But this is all three of the rationalists: Descartes, Spinoza, and Leibniz.
Yeah, those are the rationalists. Yeah, that's right.
I couldn't deal with this at all. I could not. Like last night, I was like, I'm sure there's like a synopsis, and nope.
No, these are the...
I have notes in it. I must have read it, but it's been a while.
It's heavy stuff. Oh my God. But I'm a type of person who likes to dig into these complex, big ideas like philosophy and psychology and spirituality, but really on a surface level that I can apply to my life. So reading about the rationalists,
yes.
You could read your whole life about these crazy idiots. In my opinion, they're idiots. But rationalist humanist materialism is the World Economic Forum paradigm that human beings have no spirit. So this is the enemy of humanity, these rationalists, kind of.
Yeah.
I don't want to paint
them.
They betray
how it doesn't work, because they don't love. They don't love us. That's why their goals for, you know, that's why they're corrupting their own philosophy. Their philosophy would suggest that good would come at the end. And we can see that it doesn't, because it's so corruptible. Without God or the soul, or you can't love people for themselves because we're too flawed. You have to love, you have to see Jesus or whatever. You have to love one another for God's sake. Because we don't earn it.
Yeah. So, Jesus, these people are so crazy. These transhumanists. So what is their higher power?
Well, I would say if you look at this stuff, it's the self. It's themselves. Okay. And they're super elitist. And mm-hmm. I mean, let me just read. I just uh-huh. opened to the nugget of the whole thing. Is that page 100? I underlined something. God may be made manifest by reasons obtained from no other source than the inspection of our own minds.
Hello.
This was Descartes. So that's the arrogance and the misguidedness and the elitism, because that's purely subjective. If it's our own mind, then each person is purely subjective. And how do you know who's right and who's wrong? Are people equally valuable? No. These people who like the effective altruism think that they're so arrogant. They worship their own intellect, and they believe that it's objectively correct, and that the means justify the ends, and that their judgment will result in the outcome they claim it will. Mm-hmm. That's objectivism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and they would never call themselves an objectivist. That's like what Ayn Rand says, but they must think that if they believe that they can craft the world in their image and have outcomes they can predict. And that's, I mean, I think they're a bunch of idiot pawns
yeah.
who are being really are. Controlled. You know, the controlling mechanism has little nests everywhere of different people are controlled in different ways. They're called birds of a feather. It's how mm-hmm. it's how Google silos are meant to work. And, you know, that's a whole nother story. But they're just they're intellectual fools, and intellectuals with something to lose, status and stuff, can be the biggest fools because they have something to lose. They have status. They don't want to fall out of line with their groupthink. And you know, just because you're good at analysis or something like that doesn't mean you have the courage or capacity to be a free thinker.
Let's get to the RFK Jr. for a minute.
Sure.
What's the deal with his vice president? Can you explain?
Oh my gosh.
What's the deal there?
When I heard it was Sergey Brin's ex-wife, I was like, oh my gosh.
Okay, I don't know who that is. Who is that?
Sergey Brin established Google, founded Google the way Zuckerberg founded Facebook. And by a coincidence, they were in the same class along with the guy who founded Quora. And I don't know if they were in the same class as Lady Gaga, but they were all in this Center for Talented Youth at Johns Hopkins in the summer when they were teenagers, where only geniuses went. And it wasn't a camp for them. It was a camp to study them.
Oh, Jesus.
And each one of them, in my opinion, those are created persons. Those are the ones who were given roles. So if you look into Sergey Brin as Google guy, there were contests and governmental incentives that led to him being the winner of that particular, like being the search engine of the world. So he's super sus, in my opinion. Like all these people to me, Elon Musk and stuff, they're just beards of the CIA, if you want to say, or whoever the CIA works for. You know, I don't look at these individuals and try to understand them. I look at them because I want to know their backstory. I want to know when they got plugged in mm-hmm. and by whom.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think, you know, he was legitimately married to his first wife and they had two kids, but she was also a Stanford brat, you know, like SBF, like mm-hmm. Bankman Fried from FTX, like they're, you know, ran around Stanford. Their parents were researchers or professors or whatever. And that will prepare you for this kind of Caroline Ellison, the other one too. She was the MIT brat. It prepares you for these, I think, to get plugged into these roles. So she started 23andMe, which is the thing that collects everybody's DNA. And I actually thought I read once that it was somehow like domiciled in Israel because they didn't have the kind of protections that we have. But I never could verify that. So I don't know. But like the 23andMe definitely has a sketchy, you know, it's collecting all our DNA.
Yeah.
So she was his first wife. She was Sergey Brin's first wife. So this chick, Natalie, what was her name? Here, I have it here. Nicole Shanahan. She's much younger. She's in her 30s. So she was married to Sergey Brin, but I'm certain they had like a very serious prenup. So whatever money she had, she doesn't have billions like his first wife has billions and is in like the billionaire club where they pledge their money. So there's like $600 billion under the control of the Warren Buffett, Bill Gates. It's called the Giving Pledge. And they're like, well, it's impossible to really do effective charity one off. So we're going to combine our resources and I would say control the world. There was one thing in one of these futurist scenarios that people quote a lot. There were four scenarios. It was from a Rockefeller Foundation study. People ignore the one scenario, which says like the international charities will end up being the governments or the world government because the governments won't function anymore. So this giving pledge, I think, is, you know, prepared for that backup plan. If it's not plan A, it's probably plan B. But this chick, the younger one who RFK picked, is not that rich, but it's hard to tell how rich she is, from 5 million to 50 million to billions is speculated. I have no idea.
It could be her connections.
Yes. So she's, well, what I consider about people like that, like Kamala Harris, who's like definitely in on everything, but some of these people I think are chosen not necessarily because they're good at anything or in on it, but because they've been proven to be able to keep their mouth shut. They mm-hmm. know about it already. Like the mm-hmm. fewer people you can let in on the way it works, the better. So you can pick from this pool of pre-vetted people and maybe people who are on the road of being vetted, like many are called. Maybe they just die, you know, maybe.
What about some of them being MK Ultra? Like, do you think that there's people planted in government and other places that literally are? Because I watched the Canadian Parliament and some of the behavior of those people, they're just like completely zoned out. And whenever the right thing is said, they jump up and clap like crazy.
Yeah, interesting. I haven't thought of that in a while. Like, I do believe that there were MK Ultra operatives in the 60s and 70s in the form of these like vixens and such. I think now, because propaganda is so effective and surveillance is so effective and censorship and communication that they don't actually need to do that.
Right.
But okay. I mean, there are plenty of, I mean, there's no end to the number of idiots that will just do what they're told. And I think that they choose them out of people who have a lot of vices. I have a friend in Athens who's in Athens, Georgia, where this beautiful young woman was murdered by a criminal Venezuelan illegal immigrant. And now, like, I think they're doing various investigations, but I was not aware of how, like, really corrupt Athens, Georgia, this like relatively small city, you know, there's no escaping it. But the people who are involved, like, I think that it's, well, I don't want to say anything about those people because it's not like proven. I can't prove it. But just on the bigger picture, say Bill Clinton. I just read this book by Jeremy Kuzmarov called Warmonger about Bill Clinton. And I think it's well known that he was a womanizing, drinking cokehead. And those are the people you can control. And I don't think you need to. That controls their minds in a way.
Sure, that makes sense. And that also makes me think about Matthias Desmet's, one of the aspects of his theory. I mean, I don't think he's perfect in his analysis of everything, but I think that he's onto something there with the mass formation. But he was saying that like dictators in the past and their little followers, they're in inner circles, they really believe the propaganda that they're saying. And this is the problem.
Yes, I totally think so. They're true believers. Absolutely. Yeah. I will make a little caveat to the drinkers and stuff. I actually think the ones that aren't drinking, the ones that don't drink, and they're like Trump doesn't drink at all, like they're the ones who, you know, they don't have to believe it. They don't have to actually believe it. They can actually be in on it because they're in control all the time. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if you've got somebody, you can get them drunk, they'll say stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you're dumb enough and you say stuff and you really believe it, that's totally fine too. But I think they're true believers. That's why I say like many are called and few are chosen, because, and the same thing with these super ultra pop stars and stuff, not everybody can handle the pressures. You have to see. And even with presidential elections, I think Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, or Trump, any one of them could have won and they would have performed, you know, one of the necessary roles that is in the very long-term plan. And if it had been Hillary, I doubt COVID would have come down quite the way it did, because she wouldn't have been able to control the people, that people would have gone marched on Washington.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think she was in the cards, but I think Ted Cruz could have won and served a purpose. I feel like, I would say all those three people are in on it.
Sure.
But I feel like a lot of things go into who can actually pull it off and what it is they can pull off, what people will accept at what time, you know, when. And you can only, I think, probably accomplish a couple of things as a leader. I remember just learning that in economics and college, like, you know, if you have two tools, you have like fiscal and monetary policy, and there's just, you can maybe accomplish three goals, but you can't accomplish five goals because they start working against each other. However many tools you have either one more or one less thing you can achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting close to an hour and I don't want to keep you too long.
Go a little bit over if you want, but go ahead.
Because I'm looking at my list of things.
Yeah, go ahead. No, because we started half an hour. I still have a half an hour. You can.
Okay.
I carved out 90 minutes.
I tend to go overboard in preparation.
Yes, I have done that myself.
And you're a special case because you cover so many things and so deeply. It's like, wow.
Oh,
so why don't we go back to RFK for a sec? I had another question about this guy. See, he started out, and in our house here, we were like, oh, let's watch more JFK interviews and stuff. This guy's really against the vax, and yeah. But then he said something that struck me. He said, my son is over fighting in Ukraine. And I said, what?
I didn't hear that.
Apparently, he says he's got a son over there fighting in Ukraine. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that could be some segue into the Ukraine-oriented discussion. Because our country is freaking obsessed with the Ukraine.
Oh, in a good way or bad?
In like, a bad way. Well, we're giving all the money. Canadians don't have $9 billion.
Just war?
I don't know what's going on.
Do they think it's a just war? I'm saying, do your compatriots think that Ukraine is a just war? Are they that delusional?
It started out probably same down there, that it was that people were completely on board because they saw the families running away from the guns shooting. So, and they look like North Americans, just without bringing the color or anything. But so I think that the PSYOP was really good. And even my neighbors were like, boy, this stuff in Ukraine. I was like, are you kidding me? They're all Nazis.
Yeah.
So, but anyway,
did they ever show like 8 years of slaughter on the East?
Yeah, 2014.
Oblasts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. There's been, it's that, but that's a whole, we don't need to crack that nut.
Look up Zakharchenko.
Okay.
I have shed a tear that they blew him up in a cafe. He was like 40 years old. His name actually means sweet, like Zachar and Zakharchenko. He was a politician. He was a military guy. He was a lawyer. He was, he could do stuff with his hands. He would have been the president. I think he might have been the president or whatever, but they murdered him. And they look at the Odessa, the massacre and the building, the fires and stuff, like the what they did to those people is unconscionable. But anyway,
People cheering on these types of things because of propaganda really makes me sick, because I don't understand what you have to put yourself in that place for a little while and try and think about what it might be like, regardless of cheering sides. But anyway, maybe we shouldn't get too much into Ukraine. But did you see that in Canada here, when we had this, the Nazi, the SS soldier in our parliament while Zelensky was in our parliament?
Oh, yeah. That was like international news. And I feel like that's just more of that divisiveness. Like that's intentional. You don't need to do that.
God.
They had to get the Nazis, though, because the regular people would not kill the people from the Donbass.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get the Nazis. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're Nazis. Just look it up.
It was so crazy. It was so
crazy. I covered it
crazy.
At the time in 2014. I mean, I covered it on the radio. It was hard to get people to even be interested. I'm like, we just conducted a coup against a president who was democratically elected. We did that. There's evidence. Like, I played the evidence of it.
Yep.
And I said, you know, whatever. I could go on and on. But like, this has been, we have had bloody hands for since 20.
Yeah, you got that creature down there named Victoria Nuland, I think.
Vicky the Noodle.
Oh my gosh, she's scary.
You know, we have a country where half the people, you know, people would, no disrespect to the soldier who did light himself on fire, but like, they'll light themselves on fire against abortion and light themselves on fire for abortion. This is such a fundamental, clear moral issue, that to think that you have a country that is split on that, a country that makes laws about it, it's not cohesive. It can't work. So I think that they are intentionally getting us to polarize in that way. We were going towards the center until, you know, 20 or 10 years ago, and now we're polarizing. So maybe it's going to swing, but you've got this intentional polarization because the reaction is the action. They're getting mm-hmm. you to react, so then you're the bad guy. Mm-hmm. You will overreact. That's why I'm really against that. Like, I'm really against like the anti-Semitism. You can say what you need to say about just wars and false mm-hmm. flags, mm-hmm. but don't start calling people names or looking at individuals who may or may not do things wrong or promote right or wrong without knowing them personally. I just, yes. it's dangerous and it's wrong and it's a sin against the Holy Spirit. Like, you can't do that stuff and you will be wrong. The reaction is a trap. So when you're saying there's a pendulum swing, it's a polarization and it may appear like that, but I think that the ideology is that authoritarianism is the ideology. It's the same mm-hmm. on both sides. The problem is, like the rationalists and stuff, there's subjective differences in what you think are what this AI company said are human values. So it's like, okay, what do they mean by that? No answer, because they don't want to say it, because then they would have to stick to it. It's the game is we are defending human values. The same on both sides. They're mutable though, because mm-hmm. now the right no longer likes individualism. They're becoming a European right, like I said in the beginning, where they're like, we need to take back our country from these usurpers. Mm-hmm. That is a right, or we need to, you know, yeah. So that is a reactionary right from Europe against socialism or whatever. But it's a different, our right, our conservatives, our return to the past, we're classical liberals, which is not what the right is in Europe, but it's what the right is becoming now. Mm-hmm. And that plays right into power at the top, my viewpoint, works. And if people disagree, I have to dominate them. It doesn't matter to me which side it swings on. That's the problem. And mm-hmm. it's not swinging in the direction of liberty. And I would say morality, but then you have a problem of like that there's been a very long mission to distort our understanding of morality.
There you go. I think you've nailed it there. Do you ever get pissed off about the things you're reading, about what's happening in your country? And how do you maintain composure for your audience and your show?
I've been doing this a really long time, so like a lot of stuff is not new to me. What I used to get really animated about was I would crack the code on something and I would say, can you believe it? This smoking gun, let me read this to you. Can you believe someone saw MH-70 go down right an hour after it lifted up? I can't believe they're still searching for this thing. You know, like I was just like, can you believe it? And it was really true. And I remember one of the producers at the station would say, you know, I really think this stuff keeps you up at night. It's like, yeah, of course it does. What are you talking about? He's like, oh no, the other guys are conjuring that stuff. They don't care. They're just getting a paycheck. And I was like, wow, really? I think the anger when you're looking at politics, it comes from a place of frustration, because I don't know about you, but for me, when people do get angry about it, it seems to me they still think there's hope for the system.
Give up hope. I like this. I think that that's
I'm
actually
sorry.
No, it's
not
wise.
Real hope,
that's
but
wisdom.
Hope
that's
in the
wisdom.
System.
Yeah. I come out of a bit of a Buddhism sort of frame spiritually.
Yes.
And giving up hope and finding yourself in the present fully and empowered is a little bit of a philosophy I like. So, you know, I like that. Give it's up hope, present the news.
in the system. Then the reason I'd still go on and do it and still talk about it, I think the primary thing is that, like, I've started to do my shows live on YouTube. Mm-hmm. On if people want to listen, it's Tuesdays and mm-hmm. Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern.
The Monica Perez Show.
Yes, the Monica Perez Show. And it's about 45 minutes, and I just do the stories of the day, which is my superpower. Like, because I was training to do the radio, I can read the day's news and think about it and tell you what I think in real time, which mm-hmm. is my unique thing.
Yeah.
But people will chat. And then I have, you know, I recognize names. They recognize each other. They chat. Some of them have, you know, not in this iteration of my show, but in previous iterations, started podcasts together, become friends. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to laugh. We laugh at it. And if you come in and you're, if you still believe, then you're not going to laugh at it. And it's, mm-hmm. and it might upset you that we laugh mm-hmm. at it. However, mm-hmm. they're ridiculous. And we need to laugh at them, but we need to pay attention to what they're doing, because you do want to see it coming, either to prepare, or if in your small town, there are gifted people who are like good lawyer or something, who if it becomes an activist or knows really how it works, can just rally the troops and say, like Anthony Raimondo was in Fresno, California when the lockdowns came, and he just knew that you could file an objection to being locked down and they had to give you a hearing and the courts were closed. So absolutely anybody, any business wanted to stay open, he would do it free. So, you know, how would you even know that? Like, mm-hmm. you would know that because we communicate with each other. So it, the news is, I think it has value. And if I ever don't think so, I'll stop doing it, do something else. Maybe, you know, maybe more of this more philosophy.
Yeah, sure.
But so I don't believe, you know, I there are probably times when voting can make a difference, like in your town or whatever. I think there are probably times that it gives them a harder, if everybody knows that we're all voting one way, it gives the powers that be a harder time. And maybe they have to like wait till the next round. You know, I'm not totally without hope in any, and I like process. I like defending yourself in court because mm-hmm. you flex that law, yep. the meaning of the law. It's good to know that stuff. But I feel like I don't have hope in the system, but I do think we have to pay attention to the world around us.
Yes.
But the most important thing
is being willing to evolve, being willing to be malleable and change. Because, for example, there's a new political party that just developed through the COVID pandemic in Nova Scotia here, Nova Scotians United. And I've been having them on my show and stuff, and I'm having them on again because I'm liking what I'm hearing, that they really support a tiny government, a self-empowerment model. And I'm like, well, that's what I think. So let's hear more. And I'm liking what I'm hearing. And it's a freaking political party that you go and you vote for, which is not my, I don't vote.
Yeah. And I mean, they're not going to wrestle the power back, but they might kick the can. And I actually believe that human history is just a great long story of kicking the can of tyranny. And sometimes you just, you know, it hits the wall and you're done. You start over. And that the human spirit is essentially libertarian.
Yeah, you're a real force when it comes to deep dives into these issues. But I like that. I like that. And I like a real mix. Like, your show does certain things to me cognitively, and it's helpful to learn. And it's very entertaining. And you make me laugh.
That's the point. That's what my mother said. She was a hardcore radio listener. She said, if you can't be positive, don't even bother.
Yeah.
But you have to be, it's the same thing with the callers. Like, you have to believe it. You can't say something that isn't true, mm-hmm. or you won't withstand challenges. And yeah. I've had to live the positivity, and it's been, mm-hmm. it's been a bonus, actually.
Excellent point to end on. Okay. I would like to wish Monica Perez a wonderful Good Friday. It's Good Friday.
Yes, very good.
And everyone can go listen to her show, the Monica Perez Show.
I've gotten taken down a few times. I believe the current URL that will actually function is monicaperezshow.com. But if you Google Monica Perez Show, you will get, I don't know what you'll get, but monicaperezshow.com, and then on your favorite podcasting platform, just type in Monica Perez Show, and that's a great entree. YouTube is like / Monica Perez. And mm-hmm. I just love the videos lately because people are interacting and it really helps make it more fun.
Yeah, I've started watching you on YouTube, actually.
Yeah,
I just find that an easy method. Actually, also Twitter.
Every once in a while, I have to completely wipe my entire YouTube channel because they start striking fast. And if you get three strikes, you're out.
You know,
so
what,
as soon as I see a strike come up, I'm like, shit, I've got
to. I think I should take the James Corbett road and just forget YouTube altogether and move on to other things.
It doesn't do me any good. It's just very easy for me to interact with it because I use StreamYard. Okay. That's all. That's the only reason I do it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Well,
I'm so glad that you came on the show because I'm a big Union of the Unwanted fanboy. I listen to all their shows too. And in fact, we just did a Canadian.
I saw it. I watched.